Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Workforce Agility Podcast. I'm your host, Cesar Romero, and today I'm really excited to bring on my next guest. If you're someone in the audience that is a staffing firm owner or a recruiter or a contingent worker, and you're wondering about what are some of the things that you can do to adapt in this age of disruption, then this episode is for you. I'm excited to bring on Barry Hazen, who's the president of SIA, which is the global advisor for the staffing industry and workforce solutions worldwide. Barry, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a pleasure.
Cesar, I'm really delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I always like to kick it off by asking my guests, how did you get here, right? Why do you choose the staffing industry, and what are some of the key milestones that led you to what you're doing now?
Yeah, that's, well, I think that's great. In a lot of ways, I think it chose me, and I think there are a lot of people like that, where, you know, not a lot of people grew up saying, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to get into staffing and recruiting.
Right.
But I certainly was not one of those. But it's just random luck. And I think, you know, knowing I was a couple of years out of school and got interested in service businesses, mm-hmm. and started writing, it'll date me a little, but it was sort of early internet, pre-internet almost, and started writing letters to CEOs of service businesses. And it turned out that I only got through like letter J or something like that. But I wrote to the CEO of this company called Adia, and he answered my letter and invited me in for an interview. And I actually walked in, I didn't know what they did, which is a little embarrassing. It wasn't so easy back then. And the woman who was head of human resources, Barbara Latour, sort of took pity on me and gave me an annual report to read before I met the CEO, a guy named Walt McCauley. And, instantly I sort of realized that this was a really, really interesting business to get involved in once I found out about it. And a couple of years later, Adia became Adecco. Mm-hmm. And I was there for a dozen years doing all sorts of different things, but mostly around strategy, new business development, and sort of thinking about what the future of staffing firms was going to be.
I'm interested. So what were some of the highlights of the conversations that you had with the CEO? Because I can imagine that you're probably feeling a little bit overwhelmed or intimidated by having this conversation. But what was it about the conversation that got you, this is something that I can see?
Well, I think the core of it was just realizing how big the business was, the opportunities, and the mission, which is a great one. I mean, this idea of helping people get work, and mm-hmm. Helping people who are looking for work find work, and helping organizations that need workers, that that's a really it's a great purpose, and there's really not much better you can do for someone in terms of helping them in their life than helping them find meaningful work. So I think that got me really, really interested. And it was also clear that back then, less so today, that the industry was just growing up. Mm-hmm. It was just maturing. It was starting to become more professional. And there was room to help make it better. And so that got me really, really interested in and excited in it.
Tell me more about your interest in the service industry. Like where did that come from?
I think that I was in business school and spent, there was a lot of people who got into manufacturing, into consulting, into investment banking. My background actually is in engineering, And I had an engineering degree undergrad, and I was just really interested in applying some of the principles of like how you make systems work better and processes work better to businesses that historically hadn't really had that sort of focus. You know, manufacturing businesses really had a lot of intense technical work on try to make the, to optimize those processes. A lot of service businesses just sort of happened and hadn't thought about it much. And so that was, you know, to the extent there was a theory, that was the interest for me. But, and yeah, so the staffing industry turns out to be a great example of that. I think it's, you know, as far as me, it just turned out pure luck on my part that I found an industry that was, you know, good purpose, doing good work, growing, and had lots of opportunity ahead. And, you know, we've seen that over the last 20 years or so in the business. There's been tons of growth in the staffing industry and all sorts of change as well.
And speaking of growth, right, throughout your 20 plus years at SIA, what have been some of the biggest growth opportunities for you personally throughout your career?
Yeah, well, yeah. So, you know, I was at ADECO for about a dozen years. I've been at SIA for over 15 years now. And I'd say that the biggest opportunities for growth, I think it's just been that realization that technology is changing everything about the way that the staffing industry operates. You know, I sort of caught when I first got involved in the business, I caught the end of the sort of manual era. They were still doing, you know, paper applications that were kept in big file drawers.
Wow.
And, you know, client lists of clients that people kept in their desks. And the job of a recruiter was, you know, a lot of paper pushing. And it's gotten a lot better since then with automation. But, you know, I mean, those sorts of changes are difficult. And I think that the first stage was just sort of taking the old processes and automating them. And then at some point, organizations started to realize that, you know, no, this technology can totally change the way we do our processes. And there's all sorts of new possibilities. And so that's been really exciting to see how that all has been shaping up over time.
And I want to shift a little bit into contingent workers, right? As you and I know, contingent workforce is a trend that continues to grow, and it's projected that, depending on the sources, but from what I see out there, by the year 2030, right, almost half of the U.S. workforce will be contingent. What would be your recommendation for young professionals out there, especially those that are graduating, you know, fresh out of college, on how to adapt to this trend, and what are some of the skill sets that you recommend to develop, you know, over the years,
right,
so that way that you're prepared, right, to see this as an opportunity and as a threat?
Yeah, well, I think you hit on the first thing, Cesar, is you know, that I think people who do really well have a mindset of abundance, of, you know, that there's opportunity to go around for everyone, and, you know, just be open to the possibilities that are out there. I guess that would be my, you know, my biggest sort of takeaway. I think the other thing, you know, just in general around contingent work, I think, you know, it's become pretty plain that regardless of what percentage of the workforce is, you know, officially contingent, everybody's contingent. You know, no job goes on forever. And, you know, lifetime employment is something that really, I mean, I don't know anybody anymore, you know, maybe in some areas of government or the like that still have lifetime employment. But, the ability to learn and adapt is key for, you know, for any sort of worker, contingent or not. And just so I would say sort of curiosity, always, you know, trying to understand why things are like they are, what's coming next, and a learning mindset, because the key thing that helps people adapt to contingent work, right, going from job to job to job, which mm-hmm. in traditional companies, you might go from project to project to project. It's the ability to quickly start to understand what's going on around you, to learn, to be curious. I think the first step is, you have to sort of want to learn and have to be willing and open to new people and new ideas. And so that, I think, is probably the biggest thing that I'd recommend.
That's great. And I'm so happy that you mentioned that we're all contingent workers, right? Because I always had this idea in my head that whether you are a W-2 employee or a 1099 independent contractor, the job that you have is temporary, right? So I thought I was crazy for thinking that, but now that you...
No. I've been around a few years, that all the stuff that if you think everything's going to stay the same, it's not. And I think it's best to not spend too much time hoping and trying to keep things the same, but knowing that if you're staying the same, you're just falling behind. Mm-hmm. And so individuals have to keep upping their skills, and organizations need to keep looking out to the future and thinking about where things are going and try to position themselves next. Otherwise, sort of keeping things the same is you're going to fall behind, and eventually something's going to have to change, or change is going to happen to you. And that's part of what we do at SIA, mm-hmm. is we try to help our clients, both the staffing suppliers and all the technology companies and others around that, and the enterprise buyers, sort of see where the future is going and try to prepare their businesses to really thrive in it.
Now, perfect segue to shift to staffing firms. Right? Yep. And I want to start with your book, Breaking Through, which it's all about leadership lessons, right, for staffing firms and what it can do to adapt and grow. Right?
Yeah.
And there's several pillars that you mentioned in your book, commitment, direction, talent development, execution. From your research, what are some of the things that can get in the way when putting these principles into action?
Yeah.
Let's say I'm a staffing firm owner. I read your book. I understand the importance of this principles, but when I put it into action, what are some of the things that you've seen that can get in the way of this implementation?
That's a great question. By way of a little background, for what got me interested in this was, and it ties into your question of what the barriers are, but what got me interested in this was that there's so many staffing firms out there. There's more than 19,000 in the US, and only about 150 have ever gotten to 100 million and beyond.
I was in shock when I read that.
Yeah. And so, the question we went into in that was like, what's different about the folks that mm-hmm. have grown? So we interviewed a lot of different companies, and we study, at SIA, we study all sorts of different companies, like on our fastest growing staffing firms list and our largest staffing firms. And we talked to leaders of a lot of these firms and trying to figure out what was different about them. And, the conclusion was, first off, it's not rocket science, right? It's the differences about the leadership and the disciplines of the leaders. And you pointed out some of those different leadership disciplines. And so I would say, like, the biggest barrier you know, the first discipline that we talked about was commitment to growth. Mm-hmm. And this seems sort of obvious, but, you know, there's lots of organizational, you know, leaders, presidents, owners, CEOs of businesses who say they want to grow, but their actions and their like in their heart of hearts, it's not really what they want. Mm-hmm. And so that might be like the biggest barrier we see. Like, why are there 19,000 staffing firms and only 150 or so that more than 100 million? Is that the vast majority of those staffing firms really didn't want to grow. You know, they wanted a lifestyle business. You know, they wanted a job rather than to be a leader of a business. And, you know, it's important to say there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But when, you know, that you get into trouble when you sort of are behaving in two different ways of sort of like, you know, you don't really want to grow and you're not willing to make the difficult decisions in order to grow a business. But you're sort of, you know, pretending or talking about it or disappointed when it's not happening. And, you know, by and large, the organization that grew, they like really had a plan and they had an ambition and it was a priority for the leaders of that organization to grow. And, you know, the classic sort of thing that probably holds back, you know, the 18,000 plus staffing firms that haven't really grown beyond a couple million dollars in revenue would be, you know, family or close friends who aren't up to the jobs that you need done, mm-hmm. who, you know, the owners aren't willing to make tough decisions and have tough conversations with people about like what their job is going to be. And you end up with people in the organization who can't take you to that next level. And I think, so that's probably the biggest thing that holds back the most staffing firms. And the ones that we've talked to that have grown, you know, all had these points where they had to make really tough decisions. I mean, but you have to decide like what your priorities and actually line your decisions up with those priorities. And that's, you know, for everybody as a duty as the leader of the organization to help the overall organization succeed. And so that might be the biggest one, I'd say.
What would be some of those tough decisions that you have to make as a staffing firm owner? And another question that came up is how much growth can I take, right? Because let's say I decided, yes, I want to grow, but maybe I'm not sure what that looks like in numbers or, you know, in terms of teammates. Could you share more around that, you know?
Well, yeah, okay. So, you know, I think tough decisions the people decisions are always the toughest decisions.
Right.
And so, you know, Jim Collins talks about like, do you have the right people on the bus? Mm-hmm. Do you have the right people mm-hmm. in the right seats on the bus? And I think that alone is, you know, is the toughest thing about leadership. And it's always, you know, and what you might find is that somebody who was great to grow your business from, you know, from zero to $10 million and mm-hmm. perfect in the job they were in is not the right person to take it to the next level.
Right.
And if you're the leader of an organization, you might even find that it's you that's like not the right person.
Wow. That is so tough.
That's pretty hard. I mean, and part of that is, you know, the people who have succeeded and grown like that, they've had to, this is why I talked about learning mindset before, like what it takes to be really successful at the very start of a business is different than when you've got 20 employees. It is different when you've got, you know, 50 or 100, and different again when you've got 500 or 1,000 or more. And so you know the leadership of an organization, people have to be able to grow and to learn and to adapt. And so I think, you know, that's tough. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, because we're all creatures of habit. and you get sort of like doing things the way you do it. And I think those are some of the, you know, the toughest decisions. The biggest barrier is, I guess I'm not sure if it's a tough decision, but one of the guys we interviewed for the book was Jeff Bowling, who was the founder of the Delta companies. And I don't think Jeff made this up, but he always said, like, do you want to be rich or do you want to be king? And there are a lot of people who want to be king, who want to be in charge and do everything themselves. And what it really takes to be successful, to be rich, I guess, is the ability to develop other people and to let go and to delegate and to,
yes,
you know, to be willing to have somebody who's not going to do it as perfectly as you or exactly the way you would have done it, but good enough and in their own way and have their own strengths and to, you know, and to let go and to, you know, to trust them, to hold them accountable for what you agree to do. But that sort of holds back leaders of organizations. That's like the biggest problem is, you know, that sort of willingness to let go a little bit, because, you know, you can't make all the decisions yourself. And that can be really, really hard for entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
It's like your baby, it's your business, you know, living and breathing that. And that's a real challenge.
That's probably the hardest part, that detaching yourself emotionally from your business, right? From your startup, I guess. And the other thing that you mentioned, developing your teammates into leaders, right? So they can continue to grow, because if they grow, then the company grows as well.
That's right. And that's particularly true in the staffing business. You know, it's at its core, right? It's about people and jobs, and it really is about the people in the business. And so the best staffing firms, the sort of leading firms that have grown organically in the industry, they really consciously know that they're in the business of leadership development as much as they're in the business of staffing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that starts with people finding people who want to grow and want to learn and then helping stretch them and help them grow and help them learn to bring others along with them. And so, yeah, I think, you know, they're great examples of that out in the industry. And it's really impressive for staffing firms and for others involved in this there's so many people that are helped and lifted up through this business who have really, grown and had great careers and great lives by really growing and learning in this business.
Absolutely. And I'm halfway through the book, and I'll make sure we put a link to the book in the show notes, because I'm just learning how to be a great leader, through your book. So thanks so much.
Well, it makes me happy to hear that. And I think that the stuff we point out there is sort of common sense in a lot of ways, but it's useful to sort of step back every once in a while and think about it.
Now, in terms of trends, right, in terms of what's coming, especially as it pertains to staffing industry and contingent workers, what are some of the trends that you're most excited about?
I think there's these like timeless things for success, about leadership development, growing the next generation of leaders. And it's clear that there's new challenges right now. And the biggest thing, right, is the impact of technology and digital disruption on the staffing industry. We've seen this over the last decade or so, and longer. You know, technology has always changed the business. Computers when they first came in, and then the growth of the internet, and this all of that has really changed how the industry works. The last decade or so, a lot of it has been about VMS and the disruptive change for that. And I can remember when we did sort of some of our first conferences about VMS in when it first came around. And there was like visceral anger from staffing firms of like, you are going to ruin my business. This, like, stop talking about this. And, you know, the industry is still here. The industry has grown a huge amount through that. I think what we've learned, and then staffing firms have adapted and are successful, you know, through that. And, you know, what we've learned is that with, particularly with technology driven change, there's a lot of it when it is bringing things that customers want, like they want more transparency, they want more control, they want greater access to talent. You know, it's tough to stand in the way of those sorts of things and say, well, no, we've always done it, you know, this way. You know, firms that have adapted have done really well and built big, important businesses. And so that was sort of the last generation of train that changed. That's still playing out. You know, now we're starting to see a whole raft of different technologies. You know, a lot of what we've been looking at are around talent platforms and allowing much more direct access between workers and the work that needs to get done, and a lot more of a self-service model. And I think that's pretty exciting.
And I want to emphasize that because it's something that I keep hearing on recruiterless future, right? Or recruiters going away. What's your take on that? Like, do you think that recruiters will go away in exchange of this more direct solution?
I mean, I think it's a great question, Caesar. And I've talked to lots of people about that and, you know, been thinking about it for a while here. And no, I don't think recruiters are going to go away. I do think recruiters are already going to get more productive. They're like, think back to my example I gave you before of like all the the paper files that recruiters used to have in their desk drawer with their special candidates
and stacked.
You know, stacks of resumes of like only they got to know and all that. Recruiters have become, they were doing a lot of drudge work, and you know, even digitally now, even, you know, using VMS, the job of a recruiter, a lot of it is just, you know, sending emails or texts to people or calling them and saying, hey, are you available for work on this day? Get back to me, you know, scheduling interviews. I mean, there's so much stuff that is not very high value added. So what I think the hidden little secret in all this platform growth is, it's a huge productivity story for recruiters and for staffing firms. And since I've been involved in the industry, there always was this talk about, well, what is really the job of a recruiter? It's not like to schedule interviews or to, you know, the job at its highest level, right, is to be a coach and a consultant to the candidates to help them figure out what is their best purpose. And where are theirs? What skills do they need to develop? And where can they be the most successful in their career? And you know, one of the things that one of the great pioneers of the staffing industry, Tony Martin, who was with Adia and Select Group for a while, he always used to say that you know, the job of a recruiter is to convince imperfect candidates to take imperfect jobs and, you know, like imperfect clients to take imperfect candidates. And so it is a sales job. And it's also a coach and a consulting job. And so I think the technology and the platforms are going to free up the sort of routine work from recruiters and allow them to do more of that coaching, consulting, to do more of the selling of like, hey, this is going to be okay. You know, you're going to learn something in this job. It's going to, you know, it's going to work for you. And to the client, like, here, this person can do the work for you. I think that part of it is there. And that, so I think we'll see more of a coach and a consultant role for recruiters going forward. There won't be, for the number of people out working, you won't need as many people doing the routine stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll the job will be different. And, we're seeing that in tech platforms now. They're adding things they don't call recruiters. But, if you look at the talent platforms that are out there, there's all sorts of customer service people who are helping people, right, or career coaches or whatever they're called,
Yeah, absolutely. I like what you mentioned. And it's all about what can technology enable me to do, right, as a recruiter, and not coming from a place of scarcity, but more of abundance. And okay, this technology will enable me to be more of a leader, more of a coach, rather than get stuck in the routine of the day-to-day tasks.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that, that there's stuff that technology is great at. And, so that's sort of the big challenge, is to figure out what can and should technology do best, and then what can and should people do best. And I think that's a lot of the challenge of the next, the 5-10 years ahead, will be organizations all sorting that out, that sort of, where's the right line between people and technology. I think, and that's not just happening in staffing and recruiting, right? Mm-hmm. It's happening everywhere.
Yeah. Now, Barry, before wrapping it up, I want to look back to contingent workforce, because I feel like we barely scratched the surface there. But one of the main questions I have around contingent workforce is, what are some of the most common mistakes that organizations make when trying to implement a contingent workforce program?
For the clients and the end users, I'd say, the biggest mistake I would say is making it all about reducing your price. Reducing the price on an hourly basis maybe is like the most common thing. We saw that in like the beginning of the, mm-hmm. the VMS trend. It was like all about, beating down bill rates and the like. And, in some cases where there are like egregious problems with that, that's absolutely the right focus. But, I think it should be more about, and particularly in today's market, not focusing enough on sort of talent access, I think is probably the biggest mistake. And the companies that are getting it right now have what we call a total talent mindset, mm-hmm. which is thinking strategically and in a long-term way about the full range of different talent options that you have. So, historically, the answer was always, if you had work that needed to get done, the answer was, we hire a full-time employee for it. Mm-hmm. Organizations have realized that, okay, maybe that's not always mm-hmm. the right thing. And there are some jobs that temporary workers through a staffing firm are okay for. Mm-hmm. There's others, independent contractors might be the right thing. Freelancers, maybe it's an outsourced service or a consultant, or a statement of work consultant or something. So I think the big mistake is not thinking about that full range of talent, too much focus on price on a per hour basis, as opposed to thinking about total cost of ownership or total mm-hmm. cost to solve your problem. Because usually, that's what you're looking for, really, is you want a solution. And hiring people is sort of the way to get to that solution. But I think those are the biggest mistakes, I guess I would say, that people make around this.
Now, I wanted to get your take on this. As a contingent worker, would you say that should it be my responsibility to stay up to date on the latest skills and continually reskill myself? Or should that be a shared responsibility between me, the continued worker, and the organization? Yeah. What's your take on that?
Well, I think that historically, you know, particularly in, among staffing firms, they were not very involved in training. There was sort of the bare basics of training. Given the talent shortage right now, we're seeing a lot more openness to, you know, to making this a shared responsibility. It's certainly got to be the worker idea, right? Like it's, you know, I mentioned earlier, like curiosity and a learning mindset and constantly looking to learn. That's always been a key to success in work. That's never, you know, if you don't want to learn and you're not willing to make some effort and investment, that's sort of the ground zero. But more and more, it is a shared responsibility with staffing firms and with the end clients. Some of the surveys we've had, sort of, 30 to 40% of people who take assignments as contingent workers end up converting to full-time employees. And so it's organizations that realize it's a important talent pipeline and that they should be investing in training development for those workers. I think that's an important thing, and we've seen trends toward that. Like we've particularly seen that in IT. We've seen a little bit of it in healthcare as well, where the skill shortages are so real that this sort of combination of short focused skill building classes or boot camps, and then with the guarantee of a 6-month assignment or a year long assignment at the end of it, using those skills, that sort of blend is more and more something that clients and staffing suppliers are open to, and I think is definitely a way forward. That sort of last mile of the education system that the whole industry can really step up to.
Absolutely. And speaking about being curious and learning and growing and staying on top of things, what are some of the, besides SIA, right? And reading through all the research that you put together through SIA, what are some of the books that you have gifted the most or that made the most impact on you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I love reading. I love reading history, just because we just keep repeating so much of history. things that you think will never happen. We would never do that again. We're human beings are human beings, and so I think history, all sorts of history is always really informative. One of my favorite books, which is sort of history, is a book called Sapiens by Noah Yuval Harari, who is the basic premise of the book is, how is it, what's different about humans? Why are we, for better or worse, running the planet? And how have different societies developed? And a lot of his point is around humans, our ability with language and our ability to tell stories, and to invent fictions in a lot of ways that become shared beliefs that allow lots and lots of different people to work together. And it's that ability to cooperate and collaborate, human beings, that why we're running the planet and not lions and tigers or something like that. They're stronger, they're faster. But human beings can work together. And I think that there's a lot of interesting, insights there as we sort of think about how we cooperate and collaborate and the stories we tell and the importance that they have for how human society develops. So I think that's a cool book, and he's a pretty brilliant guy.
Yeah, that's in my Kindle collection. It's one of my favorite books. Highly recommend to anybody to read that book, because the things that I thought that were I took for granted, or that I thought, oh, it's always been like this, you know, since inception, it totally disrupted like that thought. I was like, wait, we're not that special. Like, this is and it helped me understand more about where we come from, right? As humans, as a society.
Yeah, absolutely. So
definitely cool. Recommend that. One last thing, because I just thought about this, because you mentioned storytelling. So when I was watching you and hearing you speak live at the Gigi conference, and the way you presented the information, I was highly impressed with your storytelling as a public speaker, and how you were able to present the four players in the industry, you know, from staffing, workers, suppliers, mm-hmm. and how mm-hmm. you intertwine everything. And I wanted to ask you, what recommendations would you have for someone that's looking to improve their public speaking or storytelling?
Oh, wow. I think that, the first is just sort of, a desire to get better at that. And, people learn in all sorts of different ways. And one of the key ways they learn is just talking to each other. So I'm not sure I have like great recommendations for that other than get out there and talk and practice. And, there's all sorts of coaches that can help with that. I guess one of the things I'd learned through lots of mistakes is sort of keep it simple and learn to make it simple and always sort of answering the what's in it for me and why does this matter. That's what people are always thinking about. And so, just spend time focused on that.
I think that's what really, mesmerized me the most is how the simplicity of your presentation, yet it was very impactful. And that takes mastery, right? And as you mentioned, practice.
lots of that. But thank you. That's very nice of you to say, Caesar.
No, my pleasure. Thanks so much, Barry. This has been an awesome conversation, and I'm really hoping that the audience takes away learning a bit more about your background, how you got to SAA, but also how to adapt to these times of disruption. And where can people find you, if they want to get in touch with you or get familiar with your work?
Certainly, I'm out there on LinkedIn but I'd encourage people to just check out our website at staffingindustry.com, and people can shoot me an email or I think there's all sorts of people at SIA who can help. And Caesar, feel free, you can share my contact info and the like with people as well.
Thanks so much, Barry. It's a pleasure. Okay. And we'll look forward to other episodes.
Okay. Thanks a lot. It was fun.